The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jag like Michael Walker. Polanco and Franco. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, February 5th, on our first official Kokomo Friday here in 2021. I've been putting the Kokomo theme on our Thursday pods, but this is the first actual Friday one, so let's do it. Get pumped, Scott. I said right before we started, I have a nice little surprise for you. What'd you think?
I like it. You know what the thing is, even though you've been putting it at the start of Thursday episodes, we don't. The way we recorded the podcast, I didn't get to hear it myself. The way we record them now, though, I got to hear it. It's the first time I'd heard it in a long time because I don't go listen to our podcast, obviously. But the number of outdated references, including who actually hosts the show. I think if Doc Kratzer is listening, we're due for a renewal there.
Yeah. Adam, always here in spirit, no longer hosting the podcast. But yeah, look, every time I throw that in at the top of the podcast, I edit all the podcasts, just gets me so pumped. While it's playing here, I'm dancing around, having a good time. So yeah, the new streaming service that we have for video allows us to actually hear the intro when it plays. So get pumped up. Scott, we had a nice little Bob Nightingale slip up. We're actually recording this Thursday night, but you're hearing it on Friday. He jumped the gun. He reported that the Mets signed Trevor Bauer, but doesn't seem like it's done yet. So nice little classic Bob Nightingale slip up there.
Classic Bob.
We are not alone, Scott and myself. No Chris Towers here on the podcast. Again, Chris has off all week. He's on vacation. He's enjoying himself. Rightfully so. He deserves it. But in his place, when it comes to fantasy baseball, you name it, this guest has done it. He is a great high-stakes player, 35-time winner over at the NFBC, also a Tout Wars champ. Him and Scott White, Tout Wars champs. I guess I have to join the club. I got some work to do. You can find his work over at Elite Fantasy and Fantasy Guru. Make sure to give him a follow on Twitter, at RotoGut. It's Vlad Sedler. What's going on, Vlad?
Frank, Scott, thank you so much for having me, guys. It's an absolute pleasure. Just getting ready, just counting things down and doing all my draft prep and ready for opening day. Can't come soon enough.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully we don't get a delay. We were talking before we started recording. Hopefully things are in the clear. It seems like it's probably too late in the process now for them to actually delay the start of the baseball season. So as long as things can get done efficiently and safely, then yes, let's move forward with the normal opening day of April 1st. Before we actually jump into things, Vlad, I wanted to just get a few rapid fire questions at the start, things that I've always wanted to ask you that I've never actually asked you. So what is the origin of the name RotoGut?
You know, this was maybe 5 years into playing. I mean, I started playing in the late 90s kind of the end of high school, beginning of college. And just a few years in, just spent a lot of time on my research. But at the end of the day, a lot of my lineup decisions, my on-the-spot draft decisions, I really felt came from like a deep instinct. And so just kind of went with the name RotoGut, and, you know, I've just been going with it ever since. My friends make fun of me and tell me that it's not actually the gut that is making decisions. It's the research built into it. But hey, I'm going with it now for 15 years.
As someone who is named Roto Frank on Twitter, not very creative, I can appreciate the Roto in front of your name. So RotoGut, I'm all for it. Maybe we can start a petition to get Scott to become Roto Scott if it's not taken. I actually have no idea, but we'll lobby for it. We'll see what we can do. Which Tout Wars League did you take down?
It was my first one, actually. It was 2017, and it was the head-to-head auction. And I just remember it very clearly because I just, you know, it was all the guys and gals sitting around the room drafting, and everyone's just kind of messing around, having fun. And I was using draft software at the time, and one of my first times using it. So I was just like laser focused on, you know, making sure players were getting in there and just keeping up with everything. So I think it ended up helping me because I remember that was the year with Giancarlo Stanton's probably his last big year, the James Paxton and Robbie Ray breakout. So yeah, 2017, but haven't won one since.
So that was head-to-head points when you say head-to-head?
Head-to-head points, yeah.
Okay, because I'm in head-to-head points now, so I think I got to get some tips from you again to try and... Yeah, look, Ian Khan and Ariel Cohen are in that league, and they are just...
Oh, boy.
They are fantastic players, man. So it is definitely some tough competition. Vlad, I know you're a big Dodgers fan, so congratulations on the World Series win, but does the World Series actually count in a 60-game season? Let's be honest.
I mean, honestly, it does because it's in the books. It's in there. You know, would love to have them do it again this year in a full season, hopefully 162 games. That would be fantastic. But, you know, my greatest moment as a child was the 88 Kirk Gibson home run. I still remember it oh so vividly. And, you know, I've just been waiting for so long for this. And, you know, Giants fans and other, you know, fans make fun of me, but I mean, it was 30 years in the making. So I'm going to go ahead and take it.
Yeah, I'm definitely just being a salty Yankee fan. So you should enjoy it. And if the Yankees won, I would enjoy it as well. So the last one I'll ask you, I saw you retweeted my poll last night on Twitter. Which util-only player do you target most at their current cost? So not which one would you take first, but which one do you target most at their current ADPs?
Man, to be honest, I know there's only a handful of them, but I really like them all. Particularly partial to Jordan Alvarez, just because he still feels a little underpriced. People don't know how things are going to look for him in spring training. He's going to be resting frequently, how the knees are holding up. And so kind of where he's going in the 80-ish ADP range, I feel is still pretty much a value. I do like JD Martinez as well, probably going a round or two later, but Jordan for me.
Love that answer.
You're a Jordan truther there, calling him Jordan. Or is it a Jordan truther? I don't know. We had a debate over that. I guess it was 2019. Where we just couldn't decide what his name. I think we finally settled on Jordan.
That's what I thought it was. And then I think someone corrected me on a pod, and I've just been going with Jordan ever since.
It's not entirely clear what he actually goes by.
we gotta figure this out because it's like Yordan versus Jordan. It's Robert versus Robert for Luis, whatever his last name is. I've heard it's Robert. So I keep going back and forth on this. I watched some highlights recently of Yordan Alvarez, and they were calling him Yordan, like the Astros broadcaster. Right. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go with that, but I still don't think that we know for sure. So clear that up for us. Come on, guys. Some news and notes. There's not really much going on. Well, first of all, I should probably tell you what we got going on the show today. Obviously, Vlad's here. We gave you a little bit of a sneak peek, some rapid fire there. The guy knows his stuff, so I wanted to just kind of let everyone know first and foremost. But the crux of today's podcast, some people have been emailing in and on the Facebook group page, they've been asking for, we need more strategy. So we're really going to focus on strategy today, specifically for Roto, because obviously a lot of the high stakes that you play, Vlad, over at the NFBC, I know is traditionally 5x5. And then some in-season management, because you have been dubbed the Fab Whisperer, and I know that you've been very successful when it comes to placing bids throughout the course of the season. So we're going to pick your brain on some Roto, some in-season management, and then we do have some player discussions later on in the podcast. Vlad, to no one's surprise, is a huge fan of Vlad Guerrero Jr. So we're going to find out why. And I know that you successfully called the Christian Yelich breakout season. You actually predicted his MVP, and he went on to win the MVP. So who is this year's Christian Yelich? I don't know if Vlad will actually let us know, but I have a game of guess who for who I think will be this year's Yelich. That's coming later on in the podcast. There's not a lot of news going on. I mentioned Bob Nightingale incorrectly reporting. By the time you're listening to this, it's going to be Friday morning or watching this. Trevor Bauer might be a New York Met. Apparently it's down to two teams. It's the Mets and the Los Angeles Dodgers. So we'll see ultimately which team he goes to. Hopefully either one of them has a bunch of sticky stuff because the spin rate was very helpful for one Trevor Bauer last season. The only other thing I saw right before we hopped on this podcast, Scott, I'll throw this one your way. The Angels are on the verge of acquiring, it might have even went through, Dexter Fowler. So I'm not sure if this really does anything for his value, but I think more so than anything, it probably just creates this glut of options in the Angels outfield, and it might open up some playing time for the real deal, Tyler O'Neill, for the Cardinals outfield. So any takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, that was my initial reaction is, okay, maybe they're finally going to give Tyler O'Neill an honest chance. They've kind of been flirting with that idea for several years now and faking out everybody who plays fantasy baseball wanting that big power threat in the lineup. I don't know. Like, I can't get excited about Tyler O'Neill anymore. I don't know if that makes him the ultimate post-type sleeper. Like, I can still muster for somebody like Brendan Rodgers, you know, but Tyler O'Neill, you know, especially since he was, I think he hit like 176 or something last year, just not much of anything. And I don't think it's entirely like that. They could still go out and get somebody else. Like, they've decided they're done with Dexter Fowler, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're moving forward with Tyler O'Neill. So I'm not actually like Tyler O'Neill isn't soaring up my rankings or anything, but that was my initial reaction to that. I don't know that the impact on the Angels lineup will be that significant really, because they already had kind of an opening there, right? I think there's already room for Dexter Fowler. You assume Jared Walsh is at first base, Fowler in right, Upton in left, Trout in center. I don't think there's anybody I'm missing there, unless you were all over like Taylor Ward or something.
No, I mean, Scott, the legend, Albert Pujols, man. Right before this trade went down, he was penciled in still as, I believe, the starting first baseman with Jared Walsh in the outfield, but that probably was not going to remain.
Like, who's penciling him in is that?
I'm a roster resource truther, Scott, so that's usually my go-to.
I think people rely a little too much on roster resources, wild guessing at this stage of the year when the offseason is less than complete.
It is a fair point. Like, I mean, whoever runs this, forgot the gentleman's name. I should give him the proper credit. But, you know, he's just making educated guesses like we are right now. So, that's worth mentioning. Vlad, anything to see here? Dexter Fowler to the Angels?
I did notice him on the roster research page, so I guess that it is official now. I mean, and you know, they've got Pujols on the bench happening, and it just kind of feels like a perfect fit for the Angels. Just kind of, you know, one of those older guys. I mean, he's turning 35 this year. I don't think he has a lot left in the tank, but as Scott mentioned, I'm most excited for finally, hopefully, some Tyler O'Neill action. Just been waiting for it. Maybe this is the year.
Maybe this is
the year. Jason Martinez, by the way, is the roster resource guy. Jason Martinez.
Yes.
Jason Martinez. Yes. God bless his soul for everything that he does with roster resource, constantly updating things. I mean, this trade just went down. It's already on roster resource. So shout out to him. Let's get into some of the strategy discussion. And of course, we'll start off with Roto here for 2021. And, you know, things are ever changing in the fantasy baseball landscape. But Vlad, I just wanted to start with this. Any general rules or strategies that you've followed in Roto over the years, because some people have set things that they do, right? We've heard about pocket aces for some people, targeting catchers early, making sure you get one or two elite relief pitchers early on, targeting certain categories early. So obviously you have had a lot of success in this space, mentioned with the high stakes, what you do over at the NFBC. So, you know, some of your strategies, some things that you find yourself consistently doing in the Roto format.
So I try not to lock myself up too much in specific types of strategies it's a mix of sort of going for my targets, having contingency plans at each sort of positional tier and for categories, and also partially scooping up a good fallen value. A player that I like is fallen around or two in average draft position. That might be somebody that I might scoop up. And I really try to make sure that I have a strong pitching staff. I've got a couple of closers. I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of my free agent bidding dollars over the course of the season on, you know, super expensive closers or streaming very dangerous, volatile starting pitchers who are going to end up hurting the ratios. And so I really like the balanced approach. And I try not to punt any specific positions also. Like catcher, for example, I'm okay with that usually. You'll probably never catch me just, I don't know if it's out of principle or just out of the way things work out for me, is I'll never really go for the early catcher. I'm not a big believer in positional scarcity. And there are always some guys that I'm able to target that after I do my own projections, I kind of recognize this guy is basically a market inefficiency. Somebody that might, to me pops in the top 150 overall, that's going 300. So there's an opportunity to take someone like that. And with catchers, for example, I remember, Yasmani Grandal in his breakout year popped out to me as a top 10 catcher when he was going 20th. I think it was four or five years ago. And same thing with Wilson Ramos. So the one not fun part of that is nobody wants to stream, the Chris Iannettas of the world. I'm sure he's not even playing anymore, but you know what I mean? So with the catchers, I'm fine with just kind of waiting on them and just looking for my targets along the way and really not trying to force anything too much.
So you're probably not going to wind up with the Roberto Perez, Jacob Stallings duo to start the season. That's probably not what we're going for with catchers in 2021. Some people do it, especially once you get into, 15 team roto leagues. I mean, there's only so many starting catchers. That means, people are drafting 30 catchers to be started in that type of format. So some people are not going to have great ones. Scott, I don't know that I've ever asked you this, but, obviously you are targeting pitching very heavily early on in drafts, but do you target specific categories? Because obviously we know steals are very scarce. And I think ideally, with the hitters that I like to target early, you'd want to hit both batting average and steals where you can, because again, those are probably the two hardest hitting categories to find.
Yeah. I mean, steals is the category I'm most concerned about early in a roto league, because there are so few players that contribute to the category at all. And then the only ones, pretty much beyond the early rounds, the steals contributors you're going to find are pretty much just steal specialists who are going to drag you down and everything else. So I do consider it important to lock up steals early. I don't put as much priority on it as I do getting the starting pitcher volume I'm looking for. So, it's not uncommon for me to come out of a roto draft feeling like I shortchanged stolen bases a little bit. But the goal is to not do that. The goal is to get a couple of high-end hitters who also steal bases, or maybe even come away with Adalberto Mondesi if he's around and if he's available and toward the end of round three or maybe even in round four, so that you can compete in that category as well.
Vlad, you mentioned that you don't punt certain categories, like any categories when it comes to roto. I mean, I will say this, it is doable, but it makes life a lot easier, especially in a standalone league, a redraft league. You can finish in last place in a category, but you need to, and this is a fact, you need to finish in the top three in basically every other category to win your league if you punt a category. So it's doable, but it makes the margin for error that much slimmer. So you mentioned you don't do it in the draft, but what happens, say, you're 2 months into the season and you just see, like, it's not going to turn around. Say you don't have trading in your league. Like, at that point, would you look to punt a category in season and then just go all in on other categories? Or, what would you do in a situation like that?
I think it really depends on the format that you're playing, because a lot of folks are playing in standalone leagues. It's, there is no overall component like we have in the NFBC. And primarily, most of my leagues are several entries into something that has an overall competition with a few thousand people. And you really can't compete for that prize, for the top prizes, if you don't have the balance. So I try to address that as much as I can in the draft. Never really want to put myself too much in a hole, really, in anything. And it's something I want to be mindful of sort of early on in the season, like, kind of see the writing on the wall, like, okay, I have a team, an offense with a bunch of players that are really, they're hitting near the top of the lineup. They're scoring a lot of runs, but I'm kind of light on power. Okay, let me see what's available on the waiver wire. Who's playing, who's going into some nice ballparks that we can take advantage of. What type of players are, that started the season hitting lower in the lineup are moving up and are going to have more run producing opportunities, who's hitting the ball harder, all these things I'm sort of looking at as I go. And I really don't want to ever put myself in that position, because I leaving the draft is, going into a draft and not, and having to, start that way and then go that way for 6 months, I think is very difficult to do. But midway through the season, I think you just kind of have to anticipate it and adjust as you go.
Vlad, something I admire about you is that you have your guys and you stick to your guns and you are loyal to a T. But I know that you're a Juan Soto guy. And I saw this on Twitter the other day. In a roto draft, you took Soto ahead of Ronald Acuna. So tell me why you're going Juan Soto over Ronald Acuna for this season.
I mean, it's really just splitting hairs. It's because I'm going to be having multiple contests in this thing. And so really, I would rather have Soto at pick three or four and then an earlier second round pick than Acuna and a later second round. I think both are phenomenal talents. I just think Soto has much higher upside with batting average. And I do think that balances out a little bit with the extra steals that you'll get from Acuna. So, I mean, these two are going to be tremendous talents for several years, fantastic fantasy assets. So I really don't think people can go either way. You're just hoping that whoever you pick plays the full gamut of games and just doesn't miss any time.
Yeah, I know Scott and I have Ronald Acuna ranked as our number one players in Roto, and I know many people do, but I think you're right, man. Like, you can make the argument very easily for Soto. He can hit 300+. I mean, he can honestly compete for a batting title as early as this season, so that wouldn't really surprise anyone. You're really just trading off that advantage in batting average for an advantage in steals, so you got to have to pick and choose which one do you want. If you prefer batting average, then Juan Soto's probably for you. If you prefer the steals, then Ronald Acuna is probably your guy. Let's move on to pitching here and pitching strategy specifically in 2021, which is just, this is the question that everyone has, is how are you attacking pitching? Are you fading it? Are you moving away from the volatility of pitching, or are you leaning into it a little bit more and trying to grab pitchers even more frequently early in your drafts, because almost as like insurance policies to hedge your bet? So Scott, why don't you remind the people, obviously you are the advocate. This is how you took home Tout Wars last year. You started your draft with Gerrit Cole and Shane Bieber. You were talking about a lot last year, and obviously you've carried that over to this year. So remind everyone why you are going as hard after pitching as you are.
Well, it's just kind of the way that the game has evolved. In terms of power being so prevalent, and in a way that's not, you know, it's not like there's a handful of guys hitting 60 home runs like we saw in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then, you know, you still had the guys hitting single digit home runs. Kind of the expectation for everybody roughly is somewhere between 20 and 35 home runs. So it's just, it power is spread so evenly that I think there's less differentiation in the hitter class in general. And meanwhile, you got specialization taking over at starting pitcher, more careful management of pitching innings than ever. And it's created this disparity in the pitching ranks where the really dominant pitchers who are also really experienced and maybe even grandfathered in from a previous era, they are so far ahead, both in terms of ability and how much length do they give you. And then you got on the other end of the spectrum, either guys who go four, maybe five innings sometimes, or just aren't very good because of all the prevalence of home runs. They're not good enough at missing bats in an environment that's so dangerous for pitchers. So there's not really a middle class at pitching anymore. The few high end guys are really the only difference makers at the position. And it's the biggest advantage I think you can get in fantasy, to the point that I don't think you can compete unless you have several of those guys. If you end up with none of them, it's over. It doesn't matter how good your hitting is. But I think the main, if I had to condense it just to one point, it would be that you get a bigger advantage from, okay, I'm not condensing it very well, but basically, you can find hitting late or even in season better than you can pitching.
Yeah, I think that is very well said. I mean, the final point right there, it's easier, you know, maybe not in like a 15-team league to find waiver wire hitters, but, you know, in your 12-team, your points leagues, your 12-team roto leagues, I do think it is easier to find pitching and stream pitching, find hitting and stream hitting. Than it is to do that with pitching in season. So Vlad, to you, many questions regarding the volatility of pitching year over year, but especially in 2021, because now we've always had these injury risks and just, you know, these concerns in general, But now we have to worry about workload too, because we're coming off a year where like Lance Lynn just led baseball with 84 innings pitched. So, you know, trying to figure out, is anyone going to go 200 innings? How many people are going to get close to that threshold? Like, are we going to see one? How many people are going to give us 180? Given all these question marks, are you leaning into that more, or are you kind of shying away from it?
Well, in high stakes, you absolutely have to be. I mean, what ends up happening is the aces, maybe the secondary aces, the you know, the Scherzers, Kershaws, Flahertys, Zach Galens of the world, who are going, you know, Woodruff, guys going in the 25 to 35 overall range. By the time we're getting to that final week before the season starts, where we're all, you know, jumping into the main event drafts and leagues, those guys are getting bumped up even more. So these aces are becoming a really scarce commodity. Nobody wants to have to go after the Michael Wachas of the world midseason, you know, because he's got a two start week and you need some strikeouts and you end up getting 12 earned runs hung on you. So it's a really difficult place to be in. And so I'm very much with Scott in the thinking that, you know, you don't necessarily have to go over the top, but you need to have that established base for your ratios, for example, so that you can absorb some hits, so that you are getting some strikeouts, and adding some wins as well. And we look back to Blake Snell's Cy Young year. I mean, he was an 18th round pick that year. It was 3 years ago. I mean, you look at the best teams in these high stakes, these overall competitions. They not only had Snell, but they also had a nice solid base as well. They had a Verlander or a Scherzer or somebody else. So they had a nice solid base of those pitching stats. And then really anyone else who they got who helped them later was really just, icing on the cake, so to speak. So pitching, I think, is very important. In a standalone league, you can maybe get away with it. There are a lot of guys in those mid-range that you can be comfortable with. But like myself, like I love guys like Sixto Sanchez, Lance McCullers, Kevin Gausman, but I would never put myself in a position where these guys, I'm going to wait 10 rounds, punt pitching, and those guys are my ace. I'm more with Scott. Give me a Bieber or Cole or a secondary guy to start and then go from there.
So if you're in a 12-team league, some of those names that you brought up right there, Sixto, McCullers, ideally, what would you want those guys as? Your SP3. SP3 or later.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I think what's so unique about this season, and I've preached this a lot, and why I'd be willing, I am willing to take pitching early and go as far as pocket aces and take starting pitchers in the first two rounds, even in a 12-team league, is because I think because of the season we're coming off of, you are getting proven hitters at a discount entering this season for reasons that I can't really explain. I mean, people that have proven track records, guys like Anthony Rendon is a third round pick. Nolan Arenado, I know he just got traded, but he's a fourth round pick. If you don't like him, you can get Rafael Devers in the fourth round. But Javier Baez, Carlos Correa, Gleyber Torres, Giancarlo Stanton, you're getting like the 9th, 10th round. All those util only bats. It just seems like there's so many bats being pushed down the board, and maybe that's a result of people taking pitching early. But for whatever reason, I love hammering hitters in like that round 3 through 10 range. Which means, you know, if I have those pitchers early on, it gives me the luxury to do that. So that's something that I've just noticed with myself and my drafting early on here. Vlad, your thoughts on this? I know Nick Pollock from Pitcher List has termed this Dodgeritis. Maybe he wasn't the one who termed it. Maybe it was someone else. I don't know. But I've heard him use the term more than anyone else. And do you have any concerns? Speaking of pitchers early, Scott and I are kind of worried about Walker Buehler, and it has nothing to do with the talent, because I think we can all agree, like, when he's on, he's probably a top five talent in baseball. But I just kind of worry about the way the Dodgers use him, blisters from last year, innings concerns for Buehler, and the same thing for Kershaw. He's getting up there, you know, he has the back injuries. So regarding those two specifically, would you be willing to take them inside the top 30 picks?
So I recently did a draft where Buehler was my second round pick. And for whatever reason, I kind of had this weird feeling afterwards. I regretted it just a little bit. And that's partially because, Nick did mention this in his article, and it was something I was thinking about too, about how this rotation is going to be utilized. And I can definitely see a six-man scenario happening, whether they add a Bauer or not. I mean, they have six legit arms, and if they're healthy, can really be spread out. And so in a year like this, coming off the short season and everything, I can really see them continuing to baby a guy like Julio Urias, who I absolutely love, really building up Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, and all these guys. So I like all of these guys, and I think you'll get a lot of quality innings. But I am, you know, especially with Buehler not being a top-notch strikeout guy like a Cole or a Bieber, I do have a little bit of concern. The one good thing here is that the Dodgers, I was just kind of looking at this because I know the Dodgers, the rotational starters are always a cheat code. Like, remember 2 years ago, Hyunjin Ryu was like, you know, 200th overall pick and had like a 2.13 ERA. He just had an insane year when he was finally healthy. Since 2015, the Dodgers rotation starting pitching ERA is 3.36. The next closest team in the National League are the Cardinals at 3.75.
Wow.
The average in the National League is 4.20, basically. So, I mean, they're a cheat code.
That is a great stat there. Outside of Buehler and Kershaw, who is your favorite Dodgers starting pitcher to target?
Man, I want to say Urias, but he is starting to get fully priced. Everybody loves him. I think he built some good confidence there in the playoffs, and he's now 3 years removed from the shoulder surgery. So I like him, but I'd like to say Tony Gonsolin because I think he has really amazing, nasty stuff. I just, you know, I don't know how that's going to work out with those back end guys, but the price right now is decent, somewhere around 200 overall.
Yeah, and we had Ariel Cohen on earlier in the week, and his ATC projections are very high on Tony Gonsolin. So he talked about how ATC bakes in players who might not have a legitimate role yet, a cemented role, but because of their skills and their talent, he kind of, like, the ATC projections kind of project them a little bit better. So definitely a name to pay attention to there, Tony Gonsolin, someone that I'm interested in as well. Quickly promote a few things. I'm sure you know by now, but we have a great football props contest for the big game this Sunday that you can play for free at CBS Sports. But wait, there's more. You can actually come hang out with the football crew on Super Bowl Sunday. Join me. That's right. I'll be there. Me, Adam Azer, and others from FFT, Pick 6, and Sportsline on Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time for a two-hour pregame show on Twitch. We'll have the best DFS plays and a top 55 props countdown, handicapping everything from Travis Kelce's receptions to the length of the national anthem. Then we'll have a second-half watch party from halftime until the final whistle, so you can sweat those bets live with us on air. It's truly going to be insane. Adam has this wings eating contest planned where he better have to do it because he already told me I have to buy wings. And I'm like, dude, I need to sign a waiver. I don't want to like choke on some chicken bones while I'm on the air. Like we're trying to, I don't know. It's going to get messy, but you should come join us. It's going to be fun. It's going to be wild. This Sunday at twitch.com/CBS/CBS Sports HQ. Speaking of streaming, starting next week, better late than never, we might as well let you guys know that you will be able to watch Fantasy Baseball Today, this very podcast, live on YouTube and on Twitch every night when we record. So typically we record at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. So we figured why not go live, let people watch us, join in, see all the things that we mess up and we edit out afterwards. And you could do that. You could join the chat and you could ask us a bunch of questions. So it's going to be very fun. You can find us on YouTube, subscribe there, hit the little alarm bell so you'll get a notification every time we go live. Same thing with our CBS Sports HQ Twitch channel. And last but not least, thanks to everyone who has been dropping a 5-star Apple Podcast rating, but I noticed a 3-star review in there. And we are a podcast of the people. This gentleman, or woman, Bump06 wrote, quote, "The podcast gives lots of good information, but unless you are an expert, you need to know every player's team. The podcast would be much more user-friendly if the host would mention their team when reviewing players. A fair criticism. Let's make a deal." Now, I'm not going to do it for bigger name players. I mean, you should know who those guys are. But for some of the middling players and lower end guys, I will mention the player and the team that they're on. So over the next couple of weeks, if I do a better job, you bump that up to a 5-star review. Deal? Deal.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Closers. We already spoke about starting pitching for Roto Leagues, and we did head-to-head categories yesterday, just a completely different beast than Roto, but for closers, there seems to be multiple ways to attack this, early and often, or quantity over quality, and I was looking through every team's bullpen earlier, and there was legitimately only 11 or 12 teams that I said, okay, 100%, this guy is the closer, so it is as messy as ever. I usually leave the draft with like 3 to 4 options myself, a lower end RP1, someone like a Kenley Jansen, a Craig Kimbrell, maybe a Kirby Yates, a decent secondary option, maybe like a Rafael Montero or Jake Diekman, and I'll take a few shots later on in drafts. So Scott, you first, what is your approach when it comes to attacking closers and saves in the Roto format?
Well, I'm kind of... I kind of take the traditional approach of not really paying for saves. I want to come out of a draft with 3 guys who I think are more or less the closer for their team, but far from the highest end version of that. So, you know, Brandon Kinsler was a guy I was really into going into last year. Mark Melanson of the Braves, now a free agent. Both of those guys are free agents, actually. So we don't know if they're going to be in the closer mix, but I guess comparable names for this year would be like Rafael Montero of the Mariners or Richard Rodriguez of the Pirates. We'll see how that situation shakes out, but I think he's the leading candidate there. But three is what I'm looking to get. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. It's a position where regardless of how deep your league is, if it's 12 teams, 15 teams, to a certain extent, even if it's a league-specific format, you know there are going to be alternative save sources emerging on waivers all year just because there's so much turnover in that role. So even in the 60-game season last year, I think the closers I drafted in Tout Wars, which is a 15-teamer, it was like Kinsler and Wade Davis, maybe Hunter Harvey, like really, like even worse than I wanted it to turn out, but 3 guys who I thought were going to be the leading save sources for their bullpens. The only one that I really stuck with all year was Kinsler, but there was enough Stefan Crichton's, Wade Davis having a couple chances in the closer role, Trevor Rosenthal, enough of those guys to pick up over the course of the year that I think I ended up winning the saves category, even though what? Kinsler was like the only save source I drafted. So it's a category that you don't need to invest much in to do well in. You just need to have a quick trigger finger and pay close attention to what's going on there.
Yeah, I think Wade Davis got you like 2 or 3 saves in the first week of the season. Same thing with Joe Jimenez. I remember, I think it was like the first 4 games, the Tigers all won, and he had a save in each one of them. And I was like, yeah, man, like Joe Jimenez, this is working out great. And then it didn't for Joe Jimenez. Vlad, your approach to closers, are you going a similar route as me and Scott, or do you like to invest in some of those elite names earlier?
It really depends year to year. Obviously, the situation has changed a lot. I mean, there are a lot of teams that are employing committees and that are going to start employing them even more so than ever. Even, you know, their 4th, 5th relievers are going to come in situationally and come in and grab saves. And so when you mentioned 10 or 11, like I'm looking and I'm seeing even less than that, to be honest. You know, I mean, even with the Twins adding Colome, and, you know, that is going to be a mess all season with him and Taylor Rogers. And, you know, like the Cardinals, for example, like that's probably a situation I want to stay away from altogether. They've got like 4 or 5 guys that can close. Nick Anderson isn't even really a closer for Tampa Bay. That there's a committee there as well. And so looking at it, at the you know, the group of players there, there's really kind of like a big five, you could say, with Josh Hader, Hendricks, Aroldis Chapman, Iglesias on the Angels now, and Edwin Diaz, or so we hope. And really, it opens up a lot after that. Like, the next guys on the ADP there, like Ryan Pressly, for example, I think he'll be fantastic, but there's no guarantees. What if they end up, you know, adding a Rosenthal or somebody? Who knows? Melanson even. And then James Karinchak, who's one of the most dynamite pitchers in the game, but he's got walk issues. What if he struggles early on after being named the closer, and like Nick Widgren comes in and takes saves? So it's really tough. I think it depends on what type of format you play. If you're playing in a draft and hold scenario, you need to load up on as many of those relievers or guys who you think could get saves or run into save opportunities as you can. And you need to spend more early on these closers. In most standard leagues where you can pick guys up and they're free agent bidding, you just really need to sort of stay ahead of the curve, because you don't want to be the person spending 20, 30, 40% of your budget for the guy who just got named the closer. You sort of want to stay a week ahead of that, try to grab prospective guys that might be coming up, who you think might walk into a role because the primary closer is struggling, and those types of situations. So it's a category. You got to be mindful of it, but I think there's a lot of different ways to approach it.
In-season management, I did want to get to this as well with you, Vlad. You spoke a little bit about how you want to get ahead of the pack in terms of spending for relievers and closers in Fab and having to use your money on that. And a wise man, Matt Modica, who we've had on this podcast, at CTM Baseball on Twitter, he has repeatedly said, you are going to pay for saves. One way or another, you will pay for them either in the draft or you will pay for them with your Fab dollars. You're going to pay. No matter what, you need to pay for for saves. So regarding relievers, I mean, just an all-encompassing, however you want to attack this, your approach to Fab. Our Mike Kirlin on Twitter actually asked, in the years you've been playing, how has in-season management changed? Are people more aggressive? Are you better holding off or being quick to spend your Fab? So really just like how you've become so good at it and kind of how things have changed over the years with Fab.
On a total side note, you mentioned Matt Modica. Him and I have shared four NFBC teams together. The 3-12 teamers, we've all come in first place in those, and then the 15 teamer came in third. So him and I make a pretty solid partnership. He's, you know, a little stronger on the draft end, me on the Fab end, so it balances out. But I mean, with Fab, I mean, these days I think folks are more aggressive early on. It really, for myself, I don't want to be in a position where I'm having to spend 40, 50% of my budget on a single asset. I really want to sort of spread it out. I want to make sure that I save some money for the stretch run when rosters expand and when I need to chase specific categories. So I think for me, if I'm going to spend on a big target early on, I want to make sure that it's somebody that I see staying power with. Is it a hitter that is just like the flavor of the week because they moved up into the lineup because someone else was injured and that injured person's going to come off the IL soon? So those type of situations. But in general, for me with Fab, I like to be as prepared as possible. I like to kind of have a good idea of the schedule for all these teams and the pitchers that they're facing, what offenses pitchers are facing as well. And I want to make sure that I have some guys at the end of my roster that I'm comfortable burning and churning. So I think that's important. A lot of times people get stuck to certain players, like, oh, I drafted this guy, he owes me, and you keep waiting and waiting. Or some rookie Michael Kopech a couple years ago, like waiting 5 months for him to come, and then he comes and then gets hurt, and you basically wasted a valuable bench spot all year. So I want to be able to burn and churn those guys, be able to utilize upcoming schedules for two-star pitchers, maybe hitters that are going to Coors or, facing some Baltimore pitching and things like that. And then, as we talked about before, trying not to overpay, maybe speculating on a closer a week ahead of time and things like that.
Specifically, you mentioned Michael Kopech, and I remember I competed in the main event at the NFBC 2 years ago for the first time, and I spent over 30% of my budget on Carter Kieboom, and it did not work out well. I've held a grudge against Carter Kieboom ever since. But like specifically with targeting prospects, how aggressive do you, like, how do you know how aggressive to be on some of these guys? Like, is it different for everyone? Like, do you have to really have a certain level of confidence to go that hard after a prospect? I mean, how do you approach a situation like that?
I think for me, it's partially their pedigree. It's also team context. Like, are they somebody that's just coming up for a cup of coffee? Or are they going to stay a while and be around? And then the third factor, I think, is market value. If it's somebody that you just know everybody's going to spend on, it's good to maybe have some guys underneath that you can sneak in for a cheaper bid. If, you know, you think back to 2 years ago, you know, Fabapalooza, Fabageddon, whatever you want to call it, when, you know, it was Keston Hira, Nicky Lopez, all these guys. Austin Riley was a really big guy. And I think a lot of us sharp analysts were like, okay, well, he's, you know, crushing all these homers and maybe start off hot. But at some point, this guy has to cool down. He just has to regress. And it just doesn't make sense. And so it didn't make sense to spend 30% of your budget on a guy that you know is going to come back down to earth. And people, I think that, you know, I forgot who it was, but there was some guy that maybe like Oscar Mercado, I think, went for like, you know, 5% of what Riley was going for, and he ended up paying, you know, fantastic dividends. So I think, those three factors I think are really important.
I'm so happy you brought that up too, because I remember it like it was yesterday, man. Fabapalooza, Fabageddon, no matter what you want to call it, we had like five prospects get called up all at the same time, and it was just absolutely wild trying to figure out amongst that those names like Keston Hira, Riley. Mercado's a really good call because he went for cheaper than everyone else, and he actually worked out pretty damn well. Scott, I want to ask you a little bit more about like the pitching side of things. Obviously, like, you do the hitting and pitching planner every week for us here in season for CBS Sports, and for the head-to-head points leagues, like, okay, you could take some risk when it comes to two-star pitchers because, like, whatever, if a guy stinks, like, it's not going to really mess you up all that much. But specifically in roto or head-to-head categories, like, are two-star pitchers dead? Because, like, these guys can completely destroy your ratios. Like, you're throwing in, I don't know, insert name of a really bad pitcher, like some kind of Orioles pitcher or something that you're just picking up, and it can go so wrong. So, like, are two-star pitchers dead? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever a great strategy in a categories league, a roto league versus a points league. I don't even love it in points leagues, to be honest. For as much time as I spend writing and talking about two-star pitchers, I've never been a big proponent of the strategy of streaming them. And I think it's because of that enormous gap in pitcher output right now, for roto leagues, categories leagues especially. You know, the kind of guy you're going to be able to pick up for a two-star week. I mean, he's liable to destroy your ratios. It's the only time it's worth doing, I think, is if late in the season, really getting down to it, you feel comfortable with your place in ERA and WHIP. You're trying to make up ground at wins and strikeouts, and it's just a total desperation move, hoping you get lucky with that particular two-star week. That's really the only time I put any emphasis on it in roto.
Yeah,
I do want to bring up a point about the prospects, though, if you don't mind.
Yep.
The time, I assume this is an option in the NFBC leagues, but I know this has been an approach that's worked well for me in Tout Wars. The time to pick up the prospect off the free agent list is before he gets called up, before it's announced he's getting called up. Like, he's on a tear in the minors. You got somebody like me writing a prospects report where I'm got my finger on the pulse of who's doing what in the minors and how likely they are to get called up. And, you know, I'm sure there are others around the industry who write similar things. And you go for that guy then when you can get him for a dollar. Like, I got Juan Soto that way 2 years ago. I've gotten Rhys Hoskins that way before. I think maybe even Jordan Alvarez. It's one of those situations where there's no competition for him one day, and then there's enormous competition for him the next day. And if you're willing to sit on him for a while, I'm not saying months and months, but maybe a couple weeks, it could be really, really beneficial for you.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to the closer situation and kind of speculating on closers. You know, the first time a reliever blows a save, don't wait for like the second or third time. Mm-hmm. The first time you see someone fault, maybe, all right, like in a deeper league, especially if you have that reliever on your team, you want to make sure that you have his handcuff per se, right? It's more so a term that we use in fantasy football, but I think it could make sense sometimes in these deeper roto leagues as well. Last thing I'll hit on for in-season management, Vlad, you mentioned picking up hitters to stream in certain spots, Yankee Stadium, playing in Camden and Coors Field. Are you someone who's looking to do that a couple of weeks in advance? Like, is that how far out you're going, looking at the schedule so that other people don't even have the opportunity to do that? Or are you doing it just like the week before?
You almost have to do it in advance. And if you're in a league with competitive people that you know are going to be doing the same thing, I see it all the time now. Somebody's going to play a 4-game series in Coors Field, not this upcoming week, but the week after. And those guys are already getting bid on, especially in 15 teamers where there isn't a lot of depth and options that you can pick up. So, absolutely. I think it was a lot easier last year specifically because of the schedules and the way that it was lined up, where these teams were playing just essentially within their own division and then with their, NL or AL counterparts. And that was really easy to do for me all season, just picking on AL East pitching. I mean, outside of the Rays, who have a pretty solid rotation, the rest of the, you could see the writing on the wall prior to the season, how bad the Red Sox roster or pitching staff was, and even the bullpen, and that was just a fantastic team to pick on. So Fenway, nice place to hit as is. And then you get those bad options in there. And, that ended up becoming something to take advantage of. And so that's something we should look into for this year, just looking at the landscape of what pitchers have changed teams, maybe some bullpens have gotten worse. Like, where can we take advantage of? Because everybody knows about Coors Field. Everyone knows to pick on the Orioles. Like, who is this next, group of dead weight, pitchers that we can target our hitters against?
Yeah, the team that that first came to mind was just the Cubs, because it seems like they're in sell mode right now, and they got rid of Darvish, and Kyle Hendricks is still really good, but outside of him, it's like they have some pitchers there that pitch to contact, Zach Davies. So especially with the wind blowing out in Wrigley, that's one that might make some sense there as well. But just the first one that came to mind. We'll wrap up here with some player discussion, Vlad, and teased it at the top, but Vlad Jr., you are a fan of him, and I kind of feel like I fall prisoner for this at times, because
you like guys named Frank?
Now I'm trying to think, like, is there anyone good in MLB named Frank?
Lenato,
Frank Thomas guy, right?
Yeah, the Big Hurt. I was a big fan of Frank Thomas when I was younger, just because we had the same name. So
yeah,
good times there. But no, that's not what I fall victim to, Scott. I fall victim to Vlad is so young, and it kind of seems like we're not writing him off, but we don't want to buy him at what we're saying is his perceived ceiling, right? So like, oh, I don't want to draft him at his ceiling, which, right now, according to, we'll use Fantasy Pros ADP, Vladimir Guerrero is 56.8. So if you play in a 12-team league, he's going in the fifth round. If you play in a 15-teamer, he's going in the fourth round. Now, like most people are making the mistake of saying you're drafting him at his ceiling, but Vlad, if he hits his ceiling, we could be looking at like a 300+, 30+ home run, 100+ RBI. So like, I think that's what people are still looking at when they're drafting him where they are. And I think it's something that I've actually, it's a fault of my own as well.
I mentioned on Twitter, I'm taking names of people that that are bad mouthing Guerrero, and honestly, and I take emotion out of the equation and any anything personal, really. It's not like, I like the guy because he's got my name. It's like, no, I think he's a really good hitter. I feel like he's somebody that has always just, everything has come naturally to him. His hitting, I watched him personally in at the Arizona Fall League. Like, he's just been really lazy. Like, just things of, growing up in a Hall of Fame family with, with his dad, one of the best hitters of all time. I don't think he's ever really tried. And on top of that, never really took care of himself either. Like, his mom has just been cooking him the best fried goodness and all this stuff. And he hasn't really put it all into his craft. And I've read some quotes over the offseason, in addition to the weight loss, which I think is helpful, about he wants to be like Acuna and Soto. He wants to be a true difference maker. And I think if he's got that fire within him, he can really get it done. And people are like, oh, the ground ball rate, and oh, we're worried about, the people that don't like him, it's because they've already been burned on him, or, he's one of those super polarizing guys, and you either love him or hate him. There's really no in between. But the same thing with Christian Yelich a couple of years ago, that was the argument that I was getting. It's like, oh, all the ground balls. At some point, people with the skill levels, those natural talents, they make those adjustments. And then you add to it, look at the team that is being built around him. For example, I don't see Teoscar Hernandez hitting ahead of him in the lineup for too long. Teoscar's fantastic, great hitter, but also very sort of up and down, very volatile guy with batting average, for example. He's going to hit some slumps harder, I think, than Guerrero. So I'm a fan. I'm hoping people in my leagues, don't draft him. I think he might even steal a few bases. I understand I'm being super bullish on him, but I like him. And so if I'm able to get him in the fourth and fifth, I'm going to take it all day.
I think it's a good point that you bring up, is looking at more so the human element and reading the quotes and things like that, because there are times, and again, I fall victim to this too, where, all right, we pull up the fan graphs, we pull up the Statcast, all right, let's look at what his skills said last year, let's look at what his batted ball metrics were, but there are times where like we just don't look at the human side of things enough, and him putting in the work to cut down weight and pulling up these quotes and seeing what people are saying. So that is something that I would like to work into my analysis more, and hopefully we could do that here in 2021 for everybody as well. You mentioned Yelich, and there are some obviously similarities here. People worried about the ground ball rate for Vlad. They used to say the same thing about Yelich. And I know that usually, I don't know if you're doing it this year, I guess we'll find out right now, but You have an article series where you talk about, like, who is this year's Christian Yelich. So will you be doing that this year? And is there any chance that you can give us a little peek behind the curtain?
So if I knew who he was right now, I probably still wouldn't say. But I usually write this article in early March. And just as what happened with Yelich, where I was always a fan of his, but then it for whatever reason, it just hit me at some point in the preseason. And I just started kind of drafting the heck out of him at where he was going at the time. When I wrote this column 2 years ago, I didn't try to force it. I'm not, trying to market it. It's my column, but I also want to be real. And so I didn't have a true candidate. So I had guys that would be maybe like a Yelich light. And I think some of those guys were like Meadows and Tommy Pham and Puig. Those just didn't really pan out. Maybe Meadows did to a degree. Last year, I had Bo Bichette as that candidate, and I had Kyle Tucker as honorable mention. And the real the preface of it is, or the how you judge who this Nick Yelich is, it's somebody going, let's say, fourth to beyond that round, who could potentially earn first round value, like literally be a first rounder. And the way that comes is, obviously good all around production, but also includes a little bit of stolen bases. And so that's why this year I'm looking at the player pool. I'm looking, nothing's coming to me yet. I hopefully will not force it, but, right now there isn't really that guy that sticks out to me like, wow, this guy's absolutely going to be a first round value. I got to take him in the fifth all day,
All right. Well, I have a guess as to who I think can be this year's Christian Yelich. So I look back, Christian Yelich's NFBC ADP back in 2018 was 44.6. Now, I'm going to give you a few clues here. We're going to play a game of Guess Who. Some of these games have gone very well, Vlad. Some of them have gone very poorly. So it's completely up to you and Scott to see how this works out. So I'm going to give you clues. There's really no rules. I mean, just blurt out as many answers as you want. Like, when you think you have the answer, just say names. And if you get it right, you win. That's it. That's really the whole game. So and each clue that I give you will subsequently make it easier, hopefully, for you to figure out who it is. Are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Number one, I am a former first round pick from 2013.
Kyle Lewis.
Incorrect.
Oh, we have to guess after each of your questions.
You can guess whenever you want, Vlad.
Was he the first overall pick, Carlos Correa?
He was not. I don't know what pick he was, but he was a first round pick. It's not Carlos Correa. Next clue. I have a season with 40 plus steals in the minors.
Okay.
All right. We'll move on. No worries. Like Yelich, I have a career ground ball rate over 50%.
40 steal minors, 2013 first rounder.
All right. We'll move on. I had 10 home runs and 5 steals in 49 games last season, which means I was on pace for 30 homers and 15 steals over 150 games.
I'm going to say Tim Anderson.
Mr. Anderson, you got it correct, Scott. That is the right answer. The final two clues that I had: since the start of 2019, my .331 batting average is second to only DJ LeMahieu.
That would have been the giveaway.
The final clue is throughout the movie The Matrix, Agent Smith kept saying my last name.
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, so Vlad, for me, when it comes to Tim Anderson, I feel like people are still kind of hesitant. Like, they're not buying it, even with the .331 batting average over the past couple of seasons. And I feel like given his power speed combination, the lineup that he's in, you know, maybe he's a little light on RBI because he's going to lead off, but I still think that we can get like this 300 plus batting average, 30 homer, 20 steal, 110 run scored type of season out of Anderson. And if he does that, he's a first round pick.
I have come a long way on him, from absolutely avoiding him in drafts altogether to having a newfound respect for him. Like, he, and I've watched him a lot, especially the last couple of seasons. He's just a fantastic player, is coming into his own over the last few years. And I mean, I could see it. I mean, there's a very good case to be made that somebody like him, going like, a, you know, 40-ish right now, where Yelich went that year, could earn first round value.
Mm. What do you think, Scott? You in Tim Anderson?
Yeah, no, I used to be a Tim Anderson hater. Really skeptical of him going into last year. I mean, the BABIP, so much of his production depends on a bloated BABIP, but he was able to sustain it from one year to the next. So now I have, you know, I still think people expect him to steal more bases than he does. And I don't know if it'll change with Tony La Russa managing. I think he's fast enough to steal more bases. You know, where does it go on average? Like the fifth round? I'm fine with that.
Yes, for Tim Anderson, the ADP is at, there's a lot of people named Anderson apparently, when I control F. It's not great. 46. So in a 12-team league, the end of the fourth round, in a 15-teamer, that 3-4 turn. I've had, I think, two 15-team drafts where I've taken him in the third round so far. And yeah, he's someone I like to target in that range. Batting average, speed, things that I like to hit on early on in the draft. We will wrap with this, gentleman. The big game this Sunday, the Super Bowl. Scott, do you know who's playing?
I do know who's playing. Yeah, Tom Brady's there again. The Chiefs are there again.
That's right.
Looking forward to it. First NFL game I'll have watched all year.
all right, what's your prediction? I mean, you've got to go against Tom Brady, right? I mean, he broke your heart.
That's true. True. He's a big reason why I haven't been watching much NFL. I'm kind of thinking this is the first year I'll ever root for Tom Brady, just because the Chiefs won last year, you know? And I have a new respect for Tom Brady, because I kind of thought he was just a manifestation of Bill Belichick. And mm-hmm. then, you know, Bruce Arians is obviously a great coach. But
is he? I don't know.
Really good track. Look, like, I know, right? I haven't watched NFL all season. But my perception of him is a consistent track record from organization to organization, and a good coach. So, I don't know. Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl. I think he clearly solidifies himself as the best quarterback ever, right?
Yeah. I mean, he probably has already done that already until, you know, Patrick Mahomes breaks all of his records. But yeah, I would say that's probably accurate. Vlad, a prediction for the Super Bowl.
I mean, I would not be surprised if either team won. I think it's going to be an exceptionally close game. I think it's going to go down to the wire. But I think at the end, if I was a betting man, and sometimes I am, I would go with the Kansas City Chiefs in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Chiefs as well. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm a Jet fan. I watched Brady dominate the division for so long. Yeah, whatever, man. He's had enough. Let's go with the baby goat I've been calling him, Patrick Mahomes. Again, Vlad Sedler, thank you so much for joining us here. You can find his work over at Elite Fantasy and Fantasy Guru. Why did I say it like that? Guru. Guru.
That's so a weird. Very non-dope pronunciation.
Why did I do that? Make sure to follow him on Twitter at RotoGut. Vlad, thanks so much. Anything else that you'd like to promote while you're here?
No, that's really about it. Also, our partner, I'm sorry, one of our other websites, elitesportsbetting.com. We have a new newsletter that's out, the Daily Dime newsletter. You can follow them at The Daily Dime HQ. We've got some really cool and entertaining content, and giving out free picks every day as well. So thank you guys very much for having me. It's a lot of fun, and hopefully I'll be back sometime.
Yeah, for sure. He is Vlad, and he is Scott. I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
Drag queens save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good,
for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.